How long have you been playing your instruments? Which one did you start off with, and how did you wind up being able to play everything? Are there any other ones that you can play that are not metal-oriented?
I started off on drums when I was in my mid-teen years, kind of just playing in punk bands and stuff like that before Toxic, and kind of just, you know, kind of just messing around with that. And when Toxic first started, I actually was just singing and, you know, and stuff like that for the first demo. And it was kind of weird because it was like one of those things where the band dissolved and it was kind of like, I don't know, people kind of, it just flaked out on me and kind of made me realize that, you know, if I wanted to do this, that I had to do it myself, because it was really hard for me to find people as dedicated as I was, and also kind of find other musicians that were into similar types of music I was. So I kind of decided to teach myself how to play and just kind of went from there, you know. For other instruments, I guess, besides the ones that, you know, that would pertain to a metal thing, you know, I can play keyboard a little bit, like piano and stuff, but not well. I'm actually learning more and more about that. That's not going to make an appearance in Toxic stuff, so people don't have to worry about that, but it's kind of just for my own, you know, entertainment, I guess.
Well, why not?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of, like, horror movie soundtracks and stuff like that. That's kind of what the reasoning was for me learning that.
Tell me about From the Ashes of Nuclear Destruction. Why did you go with a compilation?
Basically, I was seeing over the years, you know, certain 7-inches and stuff go for hundreds of dollars on eBay, and a lot of my fans never even really heard that material before. The newer fans that kind of caught on after, like, us signing to Relapse and stuff. And basically, for me, we started adding the song Reaper's Grave into our set, and that's from an old 7-inch. And people will come up to me after the show and ask me, like, is that a new song and stuff like that. So, you know, that kind of put in my mind that there's a lot of fans out there that have never heard the early stuff. So, to me, I thought it'd be cool to kind of just compile it all into one, like, chronological-type compilation. And not to mention, we took a year off, too, so it was kind of like one of those stopgap things in between doing the break and also doing the new record. Kind of, you know, kept us fresh in people's minds, like, letting people know we're not, like, dormant, you know, moving forward.
Tell me about the Yellow Goat sessions, and what's the big difference between that and Toxic Holocaust, and why did you go with the name Yellow Goat?
Yellow Goat is basically pretty much the same thoughts of when I first started the band with Toxic, you know. It's kind of, if you wanted to look back in time, you know, especially the stuff like the Reaper's Grave thing on the From Ashes of Nuclear Destruction compilation, like, if you listen to the Reaper's Grave stuff, not too far off from Yellow Goat, you know what I mean? Very raw, very rock and roll, kind of early metal, stuff like that. That's kind of, I wanted to go further in that direction, and it was kind of fun to go back and kind of, you know, because Toxic is kind of morphed into a full band. It was kind of fun for me to go into a practice room again and just let it all loose, you know, and not have to worry about, like, getting together with other guys and trying to, like, because we don't live on other parts of the country. Like, I live in L.A., our bass player lives in Portland, and our drummer lives in Connecticut, so we can't even practice, you know. So getting together, you know, is a big deal. You know, it's really hard to do it sometimes. So, you know, it was one of those things. It's just cool for me to just be able to go and kind of do it the old way that I used to do it. It was more of like a fun type thing, and I ended up really liking the way it turned out. So I decided to release it. The name Yellow Goat comes from the first Bathory record. Was the limited edition, or the first version of the Bathory record was, it was a mistake at the printer, and it was supposed to be a gold goat, and it came back, and it was yellow, and poor Thon from Bathory was really bummed out about it, but it ended up being a really, really expensive collector's item, you know, the Yellow Goat. I just thought it would be cool to kind of tie that in, because it's very Bathory influenced.
Mm-hmm. You can hear that, and it has a lot of nods to the first Venom record.
Totally, yeah. Huge influence on me.
Do you have the Yellow Goat record at all? The Bathory one?
Yeah.
Awesome. How much did that set you back?
$0.
Really?
When I worked in Maryland, I had this job at a warehouse, and my boss was super into metal. He was way older than me. He was about, you know, 15, 20 years older than me. And he was basically getting rid of his record collection, knew I liked metal, and he was rebuying his whole collection on CD. And he was like, want any of these records? And, you know, I was like, yeah, I'll have a look, you know. He was like, here, take them, man, you know, enjoy. Because he knew I was collecting records. I mean, all kinds of crazy shit were in there, but the Yellow Goat was in there. So I actually ended up getting it for free. He was one of those people that were writing to fanzines, writing to magazines, stuff like that. He was, like, very into collecting even back then, you know. He was, wow. like, this was, like, he was into it, like, in 84, 85, you know. It's like, that's the time to be into it, you know, for rare stuff like that.
Would you do any other Joel Grind solo albums, like a Yellow Goat sequel, or just another Joel Grind thing altogether?
Yeah, I think I will. I think I will continue doing more stuff like that. That was, like I said, it was just so easy for me just to kind of go back to my roots and kind of do it that way that, you know, it was so enjoyable for me. And actually, the response was really overwhelming for the Yellow Goat stuff. It ended up selling out before it was even out. It sold out in pre-order. So it was like, it was pretty cool to do that, and, you know, people seem to really like it. People, you keep asking me about playing live and stuff like that, but, you know, I mean, I think for now I'm just going to keep it the way it is and kind of back the old way I did with Toxic, you know, mm-hmm. before we played live. It was kind of just doing records and stuff like that.
Right. This is basically your version of Bathory.
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much. What's going on with the new Toxic Holocaust record, and are there any details that you could give away right now?
Basically, not so far removed from what I've done in the past. It's sort of a little bit more punky this time around. The last record was probably the most metal record we've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is, I wouldn't say the most punk record we've ever done, but it's like definitely up there with like Overdose and Hell on Earth for like the punk aspect. You know, I don't like to make the same record over and over, so it's kind of, for me, it was more interesting to kind of move into a different direction for this one. You know, it kind of makes each record stand on its own then. You know, for super diehard metal only fans, you know, that don't really get into the punk stuff, you know, Condor might be the record they're into, but this one is definitely kind of encompassing basically all the toxic stuff in one record.
You ran Witching Metal and Nuclear Hell Records. Tell me about that experience and how did it help you when you were looking for a label to sign with?
It was cool, man. I mean, basically, it wasn't much, you know, it wasn't really too much of a label, really. It was basically me, like, making, like, cassette tapes and CDRs and stuff and trading them, but it was cool. It definitely allowed me to get the Toxic name out there by getting in touch with people all over the world. It's kind of cool, too, because I'm still in touch with a lot of the people, you know, that I was back then. Like, I've stayed in touch with, like bands like that. I don't know if you're familiar with the band Nocturnal from Germany and
mm-hmm.
Witchburner and all those bands. Like, I was in contact with them before the first Toxic demo tape came out, and I'm still in contact with them, you know. So it's kind of, it's cool, like, in a way, like, that stuff kind of, like, catapulted basically everything I've done since then, you know?
Have you played with any of those bands?
We played with Nocturnal before.
Okay. How were they?
Great. They were awesome. We actually played with them twice, and first time was in 2006, and the last time was last year in August, and both times it was great, man. It's almost like watching, like, if you could go back in time and see Destruction back in, like, 85 or something like that. That's what it's like. I mean, full on both, you know, just, it's pretty cool. Yeah, man. Man, they're great.
Conjuring Command was the first Toxic Holocaust record that featured a full band. How was the writing of Conjuring Command different than all of the other records where you played everything yourself, and what made you decide to take that leap?
The writing process is pretty much the same. You know, I basically sit down with a guitar and just come up with riffs and lyrical ideas and stuff like that. I demo it out with a drum machine. I've been doing that since Evil Never Dies, the first record. You know, it's pretty much my process of writing, but having a full band allowed me to kind of go a little bit more over the top with, you know, ideas and stuff that, you know, for me playing drums and stuff, I'm not that great of a drummer, so it's like, I was very limited on what I could do with certain ideas and stuff, but this allowed me to kind of go a little bit more crazy with stuff. What kind of prompted me to do it is kind of just the desire to kind of take what we do live. I mean, we've been playing live together. This lineup has been playing live together for years, you know, so I kind of wanted to translate that live feel to a recorded aspect, you know, because it was so different in the past, you know, it was like kind of different feels, you know, so it was cool to kind of bring the live element into a studio.
Tell me about your time playing with the Rapists and Grave Mistake.
The Rapists were basically just a punk band that I was friends with a couple guys, and it was kind of real sleazy lyrics, sort of like Mentors and like Gene Yellen and stuff like that. Like punk sounding though, basically, like, I don't even know what you can considered as, maybe like somewhere in between like GBH and, I don't know, something like that. But Great Mistake was also another punk band. I started out playing drums at Great Mistake, and then later on, after Toxic was going, we brought Great Mistake back and kind of did some more shows, and I played guitar. Great Mistake was sort of like very Misfits-esque, but a little bit more, I don't know.
Dirty?
More like, maybe somewhere in between Sam Hain and Misfits. But later on, there was a little bit more metal influence going on too. So, it's kind of like a combination of all that type of stuff.
Since Toxic and Yellow Goat aren't the first things that you've done by yourself, how does it work when you do all of these different projects by yourself? How do you make everything not sound the same if you're the only person doing everything?
That's a good question. I guess it's, you know, a lot of it has to do with, you know, just making sure it's not a complete repetition, repeating yourself over and over. And also, basically, you know, there's a lot of time that has passed between the early Toxic stuff and now the Yellow Goat stuff. It's been, fuck man, it's been like 10 or 11 years, you know, so it's like, that's a big gap to have in between stuff, so that could also be the reason why it doesn't sound exactly the same.
For your self-made albums, did you record in your house or did you use a studio?
House. The funny thing about that compilation is that the From Ashes compilation is basically, I don't think any of that stuff is recorded in a studio, except the last couple tracks, like, that were with the full band, like Atomic, I can't remember what else is on there, but the split with Municipal Waste, like those tracks.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff, the drums are recorded in a studio, but I recorded them in my house for like the vocals and guitar and bass and stuff. So, you know, it's just the way I work, man. I kind of DIY it as I go. Save money, and it also allows you kind of freedom to mess around with
right.
sound.
Because you're not on any time restraints or anything like that, so you have the freedom to do whatever you want.
Yeah, it's good and bad, because I mean, when there is no time restraint, you can also overthink type stuff, but, you know, it's good. It allows me to get the sound I want.
This was literally just a compilation where you just took everything from the archives and just put it onto something, or did you re-record any of it?
Nothing's re-recorded. That's all.
All the original stuff?
Period stuff.
That's awesome.
That's basically, yeah, none of it's re-recorded. All of it is basically, it goes in chronological order, except for the intro, because the intro, I think, you know, if you did chronologically, the intro would probably be somewhere around after the song Created to Kill. But to me,
right.
personally, it didn't make sense to have it go in the middle of the CD.
Yeah.
After the intro, everything goes chronological from date. So, it's cool because you get to listen to the progression, you know, over the time. It's stuff that I found, stuff that, a lot of the stuff was never released before, a lot of the stuff that was released was super rare, you know, with like 4 songs were available only in Europe or something like that.
Wow.
On cassette or something.
Cool.
And it's funny because my cassette player actually broke when I was transferring one of the promo tracks, it's called, like the 4 song promo from Hell on Earth.
Right.
And I was transferring, I found the cassette and I was transferring the stuff and my cassette player actually broke. So I was actually looking online to see if anybody had it so I could compare, like, cause I was kind of getting some weird issues with my cassette deck and I was like trying to compare it and no one even had it. So it was like,
wow.
It was cool to see that there's a lot of stuff that no one has.
How did you get in touch with Ed Repka for Hell on Earth and An Overdose of Death covers, and why didn't you continue using him for Conjure in Demand? And who did the artwork for that one?
I got in touch with Ed Repka because I saw him do, he did some artwork for a magazine. You know, after I saw his artwork, I was like, wow, that's cool because I haven't heard about him in so long. And when I was a kid, I had his posters all over my wall, Megadeth and stuff like that. And I grew up looking at his covers like for hours, you know, just staring at these cool metal covers. I haven't heard about him in a while. Like, and then around 2004, I saw this magazine with artwork from him. Wow, I gotta get in touch with them somehow. So I contacted the magazine, and the magazine actually got me in contact with him, gave me his email, and basically, you know, I asked him how much it cost to do a cover. He did the cover, and the only reason I didn't continue using him was because right at that time, right after we did Hell on Earth, then a lot of the other thrash bands started popping up, and they were doing all the Ed Repka covers too.
I see, so you didn't really want to go with a trend.
I don't like to, yeah, I mean, it's like, I like doing my own thing, you know, and it's like, I like my stuff to kind of stick out or, you know, not be cookie cutter, you know,
right.
So it's like, for me, it was more important to kind of do my own thing. know, I was there and I did that, so it was a cool thing for me to actually have some artwork from him.
Who did the artwork, Conjure and Command?
This guy named Daniel. He goes by the artist named Sawblade. He's an artist based out of Texas. I think he also is a tattoo artist. Art is amazing, man. He's super, super detailed. If you look at that cover, man, like, all of that stuff is just stippled, like, dots. Like barely any of it's lines. You know, it's all just dots.
Wow.
I mean, so intricate, but turned out great, man. I love it.
What's your relationship with Halsey Cost, and how did you meet?
Halsey Cost was actually my girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
Dated for a while. We actually lived together in Boston, and then we also lived together in Florida. After we broke up, we still stayed friends, and I asked her to do some artwork for me. That, like, she did the cover for Over the Dead after we were broken up, too, which
oh,
is really
wow.
Funny. It's actually funny, because I'm actually moving back to Portland soon, and she's going to be my roommate, so we're still friends. You know, I kind of met her through a couple other friends from touring and stuff, and, you know, we hit it off, and, you know, she likes a lot of the same kind of music I do.
Why did you change the Toxic Holocaust logo for Conjure and Command?
That's a hot topic, man. I think the reason why I did it was because, for me personally, I did a mock-up of that artwork with the old logo, and it just didn't look right. The old logo was too futuristic looking for that, like, kind of ancient looking artwork. I thought the new art logo fit the whole theme better. It looked so much better. But a lot of people got a shame about seeing the logo change. I don't really get the flack. I mean, it was like all, like when we went on tour, all the t-shirts still had the old logo. Like, just this one little thing, but it's cool that people are into the band enough to care, you know, so that's right by me.
Is that logo gonna be on the new cover, or are you just gonna stick back with the old one? Or are you waiting on artwork just to see which one to use?
I think this time around we're just gonna use like a fucking Arial font or something. Times New Roman or something.
Sansa.
Comic fan. I think it'll probably be the old logo. I kinda saw the mock-up of the new artwork already, and it's looking cool, so I think the old logo will actually work pretty well with it. Although it would be kind of funny to put out a record with just like a text font or something like that. Just
have it be like a recurring theme with every new Toxic Holocaust record. Just change the font and change the logo just to see what the backlash is.
Fucking windings or something.
For the Toxic and Nipsey split, you both covered each other's songs. How did you come up with that idea?
We did a couple shows with those guys in Canada, and we were kind of just drinking and stuff and hanging out. You know, we were both talking about how we're fans of each other's bands and stuff like that. It just kind of came out, like, you know, we should do a cover, because, you know, I was always a super huge fan of them, and the music that they play is really fun to play and jam on, so it was like one of those things that was like a no-brainer. And I love the way they did our songs, I thought it turned out really cool, you know, they did it in their style, it totally sounds like an Epsy.
It was also cool that idea was just there for a split, because you don't really see that happening on a split very often.
Yeah, I know. I thought it was pretty unique and cool.
It's been 10 years since the first Toxic Holocaust album, Evil Never Dies. What can you say about that, and are there any plans for a 10th anniversary re-release?
There's no plans on my end for that, but it's hard to believe, man, it's been 10 years. I mean, it didn't really seem like that long ago. We've done a lot of cool things since then, like, we've taken it so fucking far, you know, since that period. Like, I've seen so many parts of the world since then, and just played to so many people, and played with so many cool bands, and stuff I never would have thought, you know, would have happened. So, you know, I really appreciate it. You know, I don't take any of it for granted. I think it's super cool how it all turned out. You know, I just kind of continued to work hard and try to, never really had goals for, you know, being rich or anything like that, or famous or anything like that. Like, those weren't things for success for me. It was more about continuing to play music because I love it, and kind of just see how many different countries I could go to, and, you know, meet fans stuff from all over. You know, that's the stuff that's important to me.
On that record, for the cover, the corpse is wearing a rigor mortis t-shirt. Any reason behind that?
Yeah, first of all, I'm a huge rigor mortis fan, but basically, I asked the artist, I have this rigor mortis shirt that is pictured in that drawing, and I asked the artist to actually incorporate that in there, because I just thought that was such a fucking cool shirt.
Are you psyched for the new rigor album?
You know, I am. I'm curious what it's going to sound like.
I'm sure it'll be fine. It's unfortunate with what happened with Mike, though.
I know.
What was your reaction when you found out about his passing, Mike Scoscia?
That's a shame, man. I mean, that's, you know, we toured with Guar, so time over to Morris, so, yeah, that's a real shame.
I heard that he never palm muted.
Yeah, he's like, his picking hand is insane. It works so fast.
Did you ever get a chance to see them when they did any reunion shows?
Yeah, we actually played with them in New York City back in 2005, maybe? 4 or 5? Yeah, it was, what was that club called? I can't think of what the club was, but we played this.
Wow. Yeah. How do you like War Beast, and did you hear Destroy yet? The new record?
I haven't heard Destroy. War Beast is cool, though. I think that.
Being that you come from that whole DIY mindset, how do you feel about bands working with promoters and venues that do those pay-to-play shows?
You know, I think it's a pretty sneaky thing that promoters do with shit like that. Bands basically, at least in my experience, I think bands never really get too far when they do stuff like that. Because, you know, bands get discouraged because of that fucking sneaky shit, and it doesn't really help the band. It really just, it doesn't help anyone except for the promoter. The promoter basically just pockets the money, you know? And it's basically just a guarantee that the promoter doesn't lose his ass.
Right.
But, I don't know. I don't agree with it. I think it's pretty sneaky. You know, it's like, I don't know. For me, you know, we've never done that, and we never will. And it's just, for me, it's like, you know, we got offered to play Ozfest, and then he found out how much it costs, and we're like, fuck, man. Because it's, you know, to play Ozfest, you got to pay for insurance to play it, you know? So.
You need to pay for your own insurance?
Yeah, you got to take out an insurance policy to fucking play.
Jesus.
It's, like, super expensive. So you're actually paying to play Ozfest.
Wow.
And then, for what, the luxury of playing at fucking 3:30 in the afternoon where no one wants to fucking see you? But, I mean, you know, the bigger bands obviously don't have to do that. But,
well,
yeah. Still,
you shouldn't lowball those smaller bands, because one day they're going to be one of those bigger bands, and they're going to remember that, and then they're not going to want a headline when they're going to actually be able to make somebody a pretty penny.
Exactly. Not to mention it discourages the bands starting out, you know? It's like all that fucking bullshit they have to deal with. Like, that's, who wants to deal with that?
Yeah, if that's the case, what's the point of even
playing?
Especially
when you're making no money.
Right. If that's the case, you're better off just releasing your music. And that's it.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to bands that keep falling into this category?
I would say, first of all, don't worry about making it, whatever that means. You know, like, I think a lot of bands get wrapped up in getting a record deal or making it or whatever they think is, like, success. First of all, if you're into music, you should be playing music because you love it, not because of, you know, having success or whatever you want to say. What I think is success is creating a song that is good, that I like, you know? I don't need other people's approval to make it seem like I'm a success, you know? So, I think people need to stop getting wrapped up about trying to make it, you know, first of all. And two, if you want to play shows, book them yourself, man. Do it DIY. You don't have to rely on promoters to do it, you know? That's how we started. That's how we got a name for ourselves. Booking our own shit, making our own shows, releasing our own records, stuff like that. Like, you don't have to wait around for people to do it for you. Stop being lazy and do it yourself, you know?
Especially with the internet.
Yeah, I mean,
you don't need, they don't need anything anymore.
But the problem with the internet is, it's also people lazy because of, they want instant gratification for everything too. So it's like, I mean, it's a lot of hard work, and there's a lot of rejection that you get at the beginning, but you just have to fucking move on and keep going.
Yep. That's exactly how I feel about that. Alright, I'm just gonna ask you one more question. What's your superpower?
What's my superpower?
Yes, what does Mr. Grind have that the Justice League does not?
A healthy liver, maybe? my liver, after a few years of abuse on the road of just drinking and drinking and drinking, I'm like, still in pretty good health. Kind of surprising, actually, but, you know, so I must have a pretty strong liver.
So I take it your superhero name would be the Iron Liver.
I'd probably be hurting a little bit more than I do right now, but yeah.
That should be a song, Iron Liver. It'd just be about your ridiculous drinking ability.